Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we are just doing reviews. We have Bob Marley, One Love, Madam Web, and Ordinary Angels, starring Reacher himself, as well as Hilary Swank. Let's get on with the show. My name's Aaron Peterson, and joining me for Ordinary Angels in that review will be Troy Heinrichs. He's coming on in a little bit. But first, I got to talk to you about two other movies, both of which are in theaters now, and they're both receiving kind of different respective feedback. The first one is Bob Marley, One Love. It's directed by Ronaldo Marcus Green, starring Kingsley Ben-Adir as Bob Marley himself and Lashana Lynch as Rita Marley. Now, this one is not following his entire life story, which is kind of what I think many people expected, right? Like it was going to be a breakdown of how Bob Marley became Bob Marley. But instead, this film starts, he's already the biggest Jamaican superstar ever to walk the earth. But instead of that overarching, complete, total story, what we do is we get roughly 3 years in the life of Bob Marley. I believe it's between 1976 and 1978, covering where he was in this particular area. But it does focus on Marley and his devoted wife, Rita. There are some flashbacks from Bob Marley to kind of show how he got to where he was. But really, it's just focused on this small period of time, on that home invasion and attempted assassination that happened just a couple days before his Smile Jamaica concert, which kind of forced Bob Marley to leave Jamaica, flee to England, and record the album Exodus, where he had a completely revolutionary take on his own material and kind of redefined himself. And then the movie's building up to his return to Jamaica in order to play the One Love Peace concert, which brought several parties together. And it's, I mean, you start the film with an introduction from Ziggy Marley, right? Which I think is amazing. I think Ziggy Marley is a wonderful performer as well. And to have him introduce the story of his father, I think that's beautiful. What that also tells you is this is going to be a pretty safe representation of the Bob Marley story. You're not going to get the nit and grit. You're not going to get the down and dirty details. This is going to be a fairly safe interpretation of that story. And that's fine. You know, just tell us the story you want to tell us and we'll see how it plays out. I have a couple aspects of the film. One, I will say Kingsley Ben-Adir is wonderful as Bob Marley. I think he really captures the essence of the person that we know or remember. And you know, when you're dealing with kind of an iconic figure like Bob Marley, you already have in the back of your mind what he's like, what he aspires to be, what his music represents, what he represents as a person, what kind of father he is, what kind of husband he is. And I don't think anything really gets changed by this film. I don't think anything really gets modified in that vision. I think the vision's pretty carefully crafted to mimic the way that we see Bob Marley. But his representation, Ben-Adir's performance is really remarkable. I mean, he disappears into the role. And Lashana Lynch as well is just an actress that really captivates no matter what she's doing. You know, she has her own issues with Bob Marley, and they kind of dance around their relationship and they touch on a few things. And there are definitely backdrops to the issues they have as they go throughout the film. So it isn't like they completely ignore their issues, but I don't think it's at the forefront, and it probably shouldn't be, because the main focus of this movie is Bob Marley's decision to go back to Jamaica after he's been nearly assassinated. I mean, it's amazing that this man lived. It's more amazing than his wife lived. It's just amazing that this happened. How much of it is true? How much of it is not true? I would gauge most of it. It's fairly accurate. I just found it riveting to get into the psyche of a man that has to determine whether or not he wants to go back to his homeland that he loves, that also just tried to kill him, that basically tried to suck the smile out of his own soul. I mean, this almost destroyed him. But instead of letting this ruin his legacy, he went off, made one of his probably most powerful albums, and then came back and really united a nation. It's a fantastic story. It doesn't make a fantastic movie. Now, I know reviews are kind of, you know, less than stellar. audience reaction is extremely positive. I think this is a movie that if you just go and just roll with it, you're probably going to have a good time. If you're a big fan of Bob Marley, you're probably going to have a good time. The music permeates the entire film. It's wonderful. Like I said, the performances are wonderful. I think the script kind of sputters along. It's kind of all over the place. It's difficult to, I don't want to say follow, but it's not really on a linear path. It's kind of all over the place. It's a little bit jumbled in that respect. And I feel like that takes away from the essence of the film. I do think anytime you hear Bob Marley's music, you instantly have a smile. I think it just really, really captivates your soul and turns that frown upside down. And I think that's a big factor why audiences are loving the film. Maybe partially I'm burned out. I see a movie every single week, sometimes two in a theater. This trailer has been on every single one of them for over a year. It's probably the trailer I've seen the most in the last 5 years. This trailer is in every screening I've been to. So it has gotten a little exhausting, just a little bit. Okay. Just a little bit. But overall, I enjoyed the film enough to say it's worth a trip to the theater if you're a Bob Marley fan. If you're not a Bob Marley fan, I don't think this movie's going to change that. I don't think it really gives you much depth or insight into the man himself. It's really just about his decision to go back to Jamaica, which maybe that's all you need. Maybe that's all the love you need, man. Just that one love. I love the message. I love that it's telling you to come together. I just feel like it's a little long. It's stretched out. The screenplay is jumbled. It doesn't really come together as the flow it should. I don't think it's a riveting biography. I think he deserved a better script. That's what I think. I think the man is iconic and a musical genius and also deserved a better film that also probably dove into how he really became who he was a little bit, because that's the story I want to know. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I would give Bob Marley, One Love, $5. I think it's worth a trip to the theater. I don't think you're ever going to watch it again. And I don't think it captures the magic of Bob Marley that I would like to see. Now, we're almost at Ordinary Angels, which hits theaters on February 23rd. But man, I also went out and caught Madam Web. How could I not? The whole internet is captivated by Madam Web. And when I say captivated, I don't mean that in a good way. I do not mean that people are trashing this movie like you would not believe. And I was actually not going to go see it, right? I'm a little comic book heroed out. I'm a little burned out on superheroes and whatnot. And Spider-Man is my favorite superhero. It's my favorite comic book character. I love Spider-Man more than you could want, more than you could ever know. And this is a Sony project. It's not a Marvel Cinematic Universe project. It's just that Sony still has the rights to the Spider-Man universe, and they're going to do what they want with it. So here they're taking a semi-hero. It's not like Venom. This isn't really a villain or an anti-hero. Madam Web really helps Spider-Man a lot in the comic books. And she is this clairvoyant, essentially. In the film, she's a New York Metropolis paramedic who begins to demonstrate signs of clairvoyance after a near-death or over-death experience. I mean, she falls and she dies for 3 minutes. I would consider that pretty dead. Her mother, previously in 1973, went to a rainforest looking for a certain spider that has certain powers. Hear the connection. There's even a nod to the responsibility, great responsibility line. And at that time was murdered by Ezekiel Sims, who takes that spider and later does whatever he wants with it. Basically, it helps him develop spidery powers. And what happens is Cassandra Webb realizes that she's clairvoyant after that near-death experience and figures out that Ezekiel Sims is targeting Julia Cornwall, who's played by Sydney Sweeney, Maddie Franklin, who's played by Celeste O'Connor, and Isabella Merced, the character is Anya Corazon. And why he's targeting them is because in the future, in his dreams, because he has similar clairvoyant mental abilities, he sees those three women killing him. That's the only time you see these women in their spider suits, by the way, is in these visions. So if you're expecting spider women in mass doing spider woman things, that's not going to happen in this movie. This is really about Cassandra Webb developing her powers, played by Dakota Johnson. And as she goes, she helps save these women from Ezekiel Sims before he kills them. Fun fact, Adam Scott is also in this movie as Ben freaking Parker. If you didn't know, that is Uncle Ben. Because the movie takes place in 2003, which is 30 years from 1973, in case you didn't know. And this is before Ben Parker marries May. There is a reference to May Parker, of course. There's a reference to Peter Parker, of course. Yes, they're nuts. What I love about this, okay, is that in the MCU Spider-Man movies, we can't mention Peter or Ben Parker ever. Ben Parker just can't come up. You know, it's like he didn't exist, even though he's the whole reason Spider-Man has his goddamn powers and sensibilities. Just everything. Everything is because of Ben Parker, and we can't even acknowledge him. Whatever. I won't get into that tangent. I'll just say, okay, not the powers, but with great power comes great responsibility. That comes from Ben Parker. Damn it. So I'm glad we get to see him finally in a Spider-Man movie connected loosely to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Very loosely. This is really not connected. But it is, you know, you could take it for what you will. Is it a forced connection? Yes. Is it silly that it has to connect to Peter Parker? Absolutely. Don't all comic book movies do this? I don't think it's much different than anything else we've ever seen. But the real question, you want to know if this movie was good, right? You want, because you've heard nothing but garbage, right? This movie sucks. This movie's awful. Worst comic book movie ever. I've heard that multiple times. Why can't anything just be okay? Why has everything got to be the best or the worst ever? Why? Someone, please, dear God, explain that to me. Drives me nuts. This was directed by S.J. Clarkson, who also did Jessica Jones and the Defenders series on Netflix. She's a talented director. Okay, so what do I think about Madame Web? Is it as bad as people are saying? Absolutely not. Is it better than Morbius? Absolutely. It is. Not as good as Venom or Venom 2, but I don't think this is a bad movie. It's watchable. I enjoyed it. I was entertained. Is that okay? Can I say that? I was entertained. And I love the Spider-Verse. So don't come at me with, I don't know the comics. I know exactly who Madame Web is in the comics. Is this the perfect recreation of that character? No. Neither is what you saw in Homecoming and all the other ones. None of that is really that comic book accurate, if you want to be specific. So the next time you want to throw that at somebody, maybe you should know the comics you're talking about. Because what Marvel Cinematic Universe did with Spider-Man is not the Peter Parker of the comic books. In essence, eventually, but really, Tony Stark took the place of Ben Parker. Ben Parker's the most important character next to Peter Parker in his series of comic books. And yet he's never acknowledged and he's never paid fair representation to. So don't come at me with, this isn't like the comics, if you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And I'm tired of people coming at me when they don't know what the hell they're talking about. You got fandom in your veins. I get it. You want to trash it. It's fun to trash shit. We love the trash things, right? So we're just going to keep trashing it, trashing it. No, this isn't a bad movie. Dakota Johnson is charming as hell. Adam Scott is fun to watch no matter what he's doing. The other actresses are actually really engaging and they function as a fun trio. Sydney Sweeney, who I'm hit or miss on. It really depends. I thought she was decent in Anyone But You, but you know, she's got a smaller role here and I like that what she does with it. And then you've got the other true, Celeste O'Connor is really fun as Maddie Franklin. Isabella Merced, she was also Dora the Explorer. She's a talented young actress. These are all three actresses on the rise. And Dakota Johnson is doing everything she can to carry the movie home. All of them are good. Every one of them. Anyway that says otherwise, I don't know what movie you watched. And I'm kind of tired of hearing negativity just because people want to trash on comic book movies right now and anything that's in that Sony Spider-Verse. If it's not part of Marvel, we got to bitch about it, right? That's the rule. It's a stupid rule. I don't like it. And Marvel gets their own shit wrong. So how about we just watch the movie we watched and base it on just that movie? Based on just that movie, this is not an awful film. Is there a few scenes, mostly when the car, I'm sure you've seen this if you've been on TikTok, there's a scene that's kind of poorly edited where Cassandra Webb and her car falls into the river, and that's the scene where she dies and then comes back. Is it poorly edited? That one scene is. Most of the movie is not poorly edited. It's really engaging, and it's not just constant quick edits. It is not. That is not the film I saw, period. It's just not. Is there some questionable ADR, which means automatic dialogue replacement? Yes. Absolutely. There is definitely some questionable ADR in this. Tahar Rahim, who plays Ezekiel Sims, his performance is not great. Okay, he's not great. I'll be perfectly honest. As the villain, he is not that great. I think he's fine in the physical moments. Once he basically has spider powers, he also has a spider suit of sort. Everybody's got to have a spider suit, right? Once he's in the suit, he's an effective villain, and it really works, and he packs a punch, and there's a lot of cool ways that they use glimpses into the future, premonitions, if you will, her visions. Like, there's a lot of cool ways that they use that and play with the audience that way. I think that is really clever. The ADR is not great, that automated dialogue replacement thing. What that means is, like, he was on set, they captured his voice and whatnot, and they had to replace dialogue for whatever reason. I don't know what the reasons are. I couldn't tell you. Is it noticeable in some scenes? Absolutely. I am not defending that shit. That was poorly done in several spots. There are and it's in the same scene where other actors and actresses are fine. Like, so it's just his voice for whatever their reasons. Now, I don't know what the reasons are. I haven't uncovered those yet. And I'm not going to speculate to it. Movie making is a hard process. Sometimes, you know, it's not so simple to make that perfect movie. Does it bother me? Only in a couple spots. Only a couple spots. There, I saw other people that saw it, that they enjoyed it as well. They were entertained as well. And they didn't even notice it when I mentioned it. I notice it because I see movies all the time and I know how this process is done. So I'm like, that's definitely ADR. That is not the normal soundtrack. That could have been fixed before we ever went to print. But for whatever the case, it didn't get fixed. So yes, it stands out. Yes, it's worth noticing. Yes, his performance is definitely the weak spot of the movie. But guess what? He's also not in the movie that much. It's mostly about the women. And that is entertaining. They have a fun combination. There's a fun interplay and dialogue. Yes, there's some wonky effects at the very beginning when we see Cassandra Webb's mom and we're hearing her story, and it doesn't always work in terms of the spider people, because she's basically in the jungles of Peru trying to find these spiders, and they whisk her off and they're trying to save the baby, etc. This is how Cassandra eventually gets her powers. And yeah, that's not well done. That's 3% of the whole movie. I just can't stand how people refuse to try to enjoy anything. They go in wanting to dislike it. I feel that every time I've read a review since I saw the film. I never read a review prior, only after, and I don't watch videos until I've seen something, because I don't want anybody else influencing my opinion. So many of the complaints are bullshit. They're just bullshit. It's not fair. Okay. Well, this doesn't seem realistic. It's a comic book movie. None of it sounds realistic. Why is that so complicated to comprehend? I'm sorry if it blew out your speaker. It just drives me insane. This is not part of the comic books. It is, actually. You don't know what the frack you're talking about. It's actually part of Spider-Man. Well, she's a villain in the comics. No, she's not. She never was. Go read a goddamn comic book. Don't tell. It's so frustrating. I've seen so many videos and articles that are just wrong. They obviously didn't read the shit. And I realize that it's cool to hate on Sony because they're making the Spider-Verse and making movies out of villains. And I don't disagree with you. I wish it was just part of the Spider-Man universe. Why can't I get a Spider-Man in my Spider-Man movies? I understand the argument. I do. Everybody wants the rights to go back to Marvel. I don't. I do not. I think this is fun. I think it's great that everybody's so pissed off about it. Like, they fucking own it. Sorry for my language. But I'm tired of hearing that argument. This is not a bad movie. Dakota Johnson gives a star performance. She does a great job. The three supporting women do a very good job. The villain, yes, poor. I get it. Adam Scott, he is very good. I mean, he doesn't get a lot to do, but he's very good at what he does. And he's engaging. And he makes a great Ben Parker, by the way. So they want to reboot it, revamp it, and do it again. My God, keep him in the role, because I think he's got it down. But I don't think this is a bad movie. Now, is this a great movie? No. Is it a very good movie? No. It's just okay. If $10 is the full price for admission, I give it $5.50. That is not bad. That is an entertaining matinee. It's worth a watch. You're not going to be disappointed. You're not going to be miserable. If you hated it, you're being too freaking picky. That's your problem. Is it okay to say that maybe this is on you? Maybe you're overthinking it. Maybe a stupid comic book movie about a ridiculous character that makes no sense, that is just full of engaging performances and fun, entertaining set pieces. Maybe it's just meant to be fun. Maybe it's okay to be okay as well. I'm sorry. I apologize if I was too passionate. Now I'm going to segue to Ordinary Angels with myself, Aaron Peterson, and Troy Heinrichs. And I'm going to talk about Happier Things. It's a much better movie. Please see it in a theater. I think these are the kinds of films that I love when people do go out to the theater and see them, because I feel like you can see it with your whole family and kind of be inspired to build a sense of community. So here's Ordinary Angels. And by the way, Madam Web, fun time. I liked it better than Bob Marley. I said it. Not much, but a little. Here's Ordinary Angels. Okay, Troy, you're joining me to talk about Ordinary Angels, which is in theaters on February 23rd. I want to tell you what this is about real quick before we get into it. So Ordinary Angels is based on the memoir by Sharon Stevens Evans. It was written by Kelly Freeman Craig and Meg Tilly. Yeah, the actress, Meg Tilly. And it's directed by John Gunn, not James Gunn, who also wrote American Underdog and Jesus Revolution. I liked American Underdog. Our Ordinary Angels follows a family who have endured nothing but struggle for several years. Alan Ritchson, yes, my boy Reacher, plays against his recent roles as Ed Schmidt, the father of two little girls. Their mother and Ed's wife passed away recently, and his little five-year-old daughter desperately needs a liver transplant or she will soon die. They are not having a great time, and they are up to their neck in debt. So along comes Sharon Stevens. And just like Sharon Stevens was divorced twice, Hilary Swank is a two-time Oscar winner. I have no idea how those two things are connected, but I like the number two. And Swank is a wonderful actress. That's all I'm trying to say. Sharon is a hairdresser with a drinking problem as well as getting her shit together problem. But when she hears about Ed's wife's funeral and later his daughter Michelle's plight, she feels as though she's being called to help this family. So Sharon forces herself in and begins to raise money for the Schmidts while also weaving a way into their hearts. Oh, as she finally comes to grips with their own mistakes. Everything comes to a head in 1994, 30 years ago this year. There's a polarizing snowstorm in Louisville, Kentucky. 19 inches is dumping on them, and the call finally comes through that a donor is found. But due to the weather, no one can get a plane out, so Sharon and Ed are going to try and pull off one more miracle. And how in the world can an entire community come together to help them? Troy, you walked into this going, man, another one of these.
It's not that it's not another one of these. It's just... You get the studio on the front end and everything, and you're like, oh, okay, this is one of those, like, you know, religious Jesus, squeeze them, come and feel them kind of movie house type of productions. And you're like, how cheesy is this going to get?
I don't know about the come and feel them part. I don't remember that part coming through, but yeah, I'm with you so far, mostly.
Well, they can't feel anything because there's a snowstorm and they don't have any gloves on.
Oh, my God. All right, well, let's start performances first, okay? So you got Hilary Swank, two-time Oscar winner. You got Alan Ritchson, who's been nothing but on the upward swing since Reacher came out. I mean, he's just been showing up in property after property, and he's got another one coming out soon, a Guy Ritchie movie with Henry Cavill. But this is really a against his type up to this point. So what did you think about these two?
Yeah, if you told me that Ritchson was going to be in this movie, I would have been like, what are you talking about? Like, there's no way that beefy muscle guy, you know, Fast and the Furious kind of dude. Like, no way. Reacher's not going to be taking this role seriously. And let me tell you something. If you didn't love Alan Ritchson before, you will definitely love him after this movie because he slays in this movie. I think he plays the backwood Kentucky dad caring for his two kids. His wife passes away very early in the movie. He plays that somber, I can do it myself, stoic kind of feels, but also really... His passion as a dad in this movie really shows for his kids. And so I really think he nailed it in his performance, to be quite honest.
And I'm sure there's some blending of worlds here too, because, you know, I've seen him on Instagram and he's a big family man. He's always, you know, showing videos of him and his wife and his kids and whatnot. He seems very family focused, but it is much more of a dour, kind of desperate, just a guy trying to get by role. Which is definitely something I haven't seen him do. I mean, he's a long way from Blue Mountain State. So, I thought he was great. He really, really surprised me. He really, really has a lot of layers to him as an actor. It's nice to see him It's really nice to see him take this stretch because you know he's getting offered muscle guy role after action role. I mean, that's what he's getting offered right now. And he decided to go against type and do something in faith-based community. I mean, do something that speaks to him. He's a Christian man. That's obviously something that hits him in the heart, and he delivers on the screen, and I think that really comes through, especially his relationship with his two little girls. Because even though child actors can be what they are, you know, hit or miss, when he has those moments with those little girls, he feels like a real dad. And I think that's important to make this movie work. What about the swank, though? Does she have the swank?
Not really.
What? So, you didn't like Hillary here.
It's not that I didn't like Hillary. It's that I didn't like the character per se, because like you don't want to knock an Oscar winning actress. But at the same time, another Oscar winning actress is all I kind of saw when I looked at this character throughout the course of the movie. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh, it's Erin Brockovich meets Stillwater. That's really what's going on in this movie.
It is very much that. Yeah.
And I'm just the whole time I'm just thinking Erin Brockovich, rather than thinking about this other mother who has her own challenges in life and her own relationships that she's trying to come away with a victory on. And the whole experience that goes through this entire movie of her trying to reconnect with her own family, it's kind of like, yeah, like anybody could play this role. And so I didn't think Hillary specifically brought anything magical to the performance other than just she has a really great smile. And so the smile that she portrays in this to charm the people she needs to charm in order to make the things happen that she needs to make happen, I think definitely does play up the movie a little bit and gives it that kind of love and warm and caring feeling that we're looking for. But at the same time, anybody could have been dropped in this and it probably would have worked just fine.
I'm going to take the opposite side of you. So it's going to be a choice that Aaron said on this one. I thought she was great. I loved Hillary Swank. She had the energy. She's got that full teeth smile, you know, that really just brightens the light in every room. I thought she was great. I really thought she brought the energy. I thought she had a nice dynamic with Alan Ritchson. It was nice that there's nothing romantic here. Like this is actually a woman that kind of gets on his nerves half the time, but he knows that she's doing things that he can't do. You know, he's a nurturer, but he's not someone that can fundraise. He has no idea. He's proud. That's the problem with a lot of people that are going through struggle, is they're very proud. I've been there. I understand you don't want to ask for help. And he needed help. He desperately needed help, but just couldn't ask for it. And she's like, I won't wait for you to ask for it. I need to deal with my own demons. And this is a way to work that out. So I'm going to get in everybody's face and do the things that you can't do. And I think she handled that wonderfully. I thought she was great. I really loved Hilary Swank in this in a way that I haven't loved her in a while. Cause I think she hasn't done, she's done smaller films that just haven't clicked, I think, on some level, but she's always been a great actress. So we'll agree to disagree on that one, but I will say this. I feel like the production doesn't stand out in any noticeable way other than the film is well paced and well shot, especially amidst the weather requirements in the last act. But I did pay mine to mention the final shot of the film, which I won't speak to because I don't want to spoil it for anything, but I really loved it. Before you get to the final credits and everything, there's just the final shot for whatever reason really just kind of punched me in the gut. But what did you think about the production? Did anything stand out for you?
Yeah, no, nothing really that you wouldn't see probably on any kind of streaming service or maybe even a Hallmark movie from a production quality. There's some things in there that I think are really good from how they tweaked it. And I want to give away one specific shot at the end of the movie that's really, really great. And it's really more cinematography than anything in that particular moment and how they actually set that shot up. But y'all in all, it's shot very well. There's nothing in it that really makes me go get taken out of the movie in any way, shape or form. I love the opening bar sequence, even when she's dancing on the bar, and then obviously you can predict what's going to happen. But the way that the camera doesn't like zoom in on her and, you know, gets up close, that stays kind of back as you're like the observer in the audience. I thought that was really well done for that particular sequence. There's just a lot of good shots. It's just not anything that's like, wow, that was like really fast. Oh, wow, that was really great. Except for that one right at the end.
Yeah, there's nothing flashy.
Maybe two at the end that are kind of flashy.
But nothing overall that's really standing out. I mean, it's just a very... It's well shot.
It's well put together.
Nothing distracting. There's no frickin' shaky cam. So thank God for that. So the story is a feel good movie. It's inspired by a true story, those kinds of type. And a lot of times they're overrun in cliches and tearjerker moments. And I don't think this one's any different in that respect. But the question I have for you is, does that still work? Does the movie still work for you?
You mean, did I actually cry in this movie? Is that what you're asking
me? I'm saying a lot of people are going to point to, well, it's cliche. We've seen that before. We know where it's going. And I'm kind of curious let me posit it with where my line of thinking is. I knew exactly how the movie was going to end 5 minutes into this movie. If you've seen the trailer, you know exactly what's going to happen 5 minutes after that trailer is over. I say that 100% certainty because as I started watching it, I knew exactly how it was going to end and I felt pretty comfortable with it. And same feeling I had when I watched the trailer. That said, that doesn't mean that the movie doesn't work. Just because I know how it's going to end doesn't take away from the movie. The movie still worked on every level I wanted it to work on. And I'm not a very religious person. I'm not devout. I mean, I come from half my family is religious and half my family is whatever the opposite of that is, Satanist, I guess. So I'm kidding. They're not, don't write them. And the religious aspect, I thought they had enough attention to the prayer aspect because, you know, they are saying prayer is important, but I didn't feel like it was just jamming God down your throat. I didn't feel like it was that. I felt like they're speaking, at least in the terms of this movie, are speaking to it in the respect that prayer is a way to keep your optimism up, is a way to bring community together. It's a way to believe in something positive when all things seem negative. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to believe in a higher power. You're just prayer brings people together in many respects. And that's how I feel like the film was telling that story. And then the cliches that are there that you find in these kinds of movies, they all worked. I did get misty-eyed. I did get emotional. I did want this to work out. And I understood when he's upset with her and she's upset with herself and she's struggling to put pieces back to her own life in terms of getting to know her own son and things like that. All these things still worked for me. Like I really, even though I knew where everything was going, I enjoyed every step of the way. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed the story and the pacing and how it all came together. And I think we've always talked about this concept, Aaron, about how even if you know where the story is going, if it makes logical sense for it to get there, mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, predictable or cliche or, you know, run of the mill. It just means that it was very well written. And this was very well written. I think also a lot of the aspects of the prayer piece were not very in your face. There was one moment that was kind of like, okay, here's the God cliche moment. You know, followed by immediately going to a church afterwards, and you're just kind of like rolling your eyes a little bit. But at the same time, I think what was really great about this movie is that it talked about the real parts of Christianity that I think Christianity kind of forgets about, and it's really about the human connection. There's more about, do you trust the people that are with you to do the things that they say they're doing, which is help out and get this money, and is it ethical, and is it legal, and all of that. So there's a lot of great human connection story. Even if you remove the God component of the movie out of it, which obviously you can't because it's all about angels and miracles and all of this stuff happening. But I think that it wasn't over the top at all. There's a couple moments where you're kind of like, okay, that's a little cliche, but it goes in the spots where it's supposed to go. So therefore, it makes it enjoyable as it goes through towards its natural progression at the end, which of course, I would recommend not seeing the trailer because you can pretty much literally figure out how the movie ends if you see the trailer, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, they do kind of give a lot away in the trailer, which is too bad. But I also think it didn't take away from me enjoying the movie, probably because I've seen so many trailers. I'm just kind of conditioned to, I'm probably going to see stuff that I've already seen. It's just the way it is. Now, I do want to know, so overall, you went into it kind of, well, we'll see, but you liked the story, even though you felt like you knew where the story was going. Did that taint your enjoyment at all? Or did you walk away and say, no, I really enjoyed this movie?
No. I sat and I was like, okay, I could probably skip the scene. I could skip this scene, go to the end. Cause we obviously got a pre-look copy of it. So it's not, you had to go to the theater and you were forced to sit through the whole 2 hours. Like we could have jumped around if we wanted to. And I watched the whole 2 hours. I was thoroughly captivated in the performances. The score is actually really good. It kind of pulls you in and you're kind of, you know, especially when you get towards the end of the movie, there are some elements of like, well, are they going to make it? I don't know if they're going to make it. Are they going to make it? And that whole sequence really draws you in the last 30 minutes for sure. There's probably some fluff in the middle that could probably be cut out and make it more like an hour 40. But overall, I mean, I didn't find myself bored at any point during the course of the movie.
Man, I really felt it when Richson's Ed Schmidt is, he's fighting, he's just doing everything he can to get his daughter for this donation and trying to get there. And you're fighting weather elements and you're fighting traffic. And it's just like fighting everything in the world. And I've been in that situation where as a dad, all you want to do is get your kid to safety for whatever reason. And everything in the world seems like it's against you. I know what that feeling is. And I think he captured that perfectly. Like perfectly. I really felt like I was in that car with him a lot. I don't know if you did too.
Yeah, no, I think the last half of the movie, the last 30 minutes, the whole snowstorm sequence, like all of that works magically. You know, it's the front half of the, you know, extra fundraising and doing, you could probably cut out a couple of those pieces because we kind of get the idea. You don't have
sure,
to
I
do
see what
it,
you're saying there.
You know, over and over and over again. Like, oh, here's $3,000. Oh, here's $10,000. Oh, here's $100,000. It's like, we get it. She's good at getting stuff. You know, we don't need to watch the getting stuff over and over and over again. We want the drama. And the drama comes in that last 30 minutes of the movie, which is really captivating. You won't stand up for sure.
Before we finish this, I got to ask you, because you're a pretty religious person. I come from a half religious, like I said, half Satanist, half religious people. I want to talk about the godliness of the film, because some people, when they talk about a movie like this, where they say that there's some kind of faith angle, even though I think it's very minimal, and I don't see how it would offend you any more than not having faith in a movie would offend anyone. But some people really get knee-jerk reactions to faith-based movies. Do you find that to be a bad thing? Why or why not?
I mean, I'm on a little bit of a different faith journey than I've probably been in the past. I would consider myself more spiritual now than Christian specifically.
Okay.
I think there's a different angle on how, I do believe that there is something bigger than us out there. I do believe that, you know, being kind and considerate to our fellow human beings that we share the planet with is definitely something we should do. So yeah, there are elements in here where, you know, they pray at one specific point in time. And I kind of look at prayer now as like, it's not so much that you're talking to God. It's that you're just at a point where you're like, I just need to calm my body down and I need to like center myself and figure out what the next step is. And if that's just talking out loud to an eternal being or talking out loud to yourself in the mirror or meditating or whatever that would end up being, there's all components of that that are valid. And I think in this case, you know, the fact that they go to prayer, it's because there is a good chunk of the country that still is in that, you know, religious camp, if you will, where God is some, you know, all important being. So there is a core audience that probably will not go see this movie just because they're anti-God or don't think God exists. Right. But the majority of the country does. So therefore, they're playing to their audience in that regard. So I'm not opposed to the spiritual element to it. I think everything that they did do from a spiritual perspective hits the tones that you would expect it to hit. And I could enjoy the movie, whether it was spiritual or not. So I think there's still a lot of good in the movie because I think it's more about the human connection story and how this town comes together to rally around this girl, Michelle, I believe was her name. Mm-hmm. And the things that they do to get that transplant potentially happen for her. I think that's really what the movie's about. It's not about God and what God did and all the miracles that happened because of it. It's because people were just actually good neighbors. And that's really what it really comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, the title really refers to ordinary citizens providing miracles in many ways, you know, if they're donating their funds, helping shovel, like all these things that people do. Well, they used to do. I don't know if they do them anymore. Everybody's too busy telling everybody they're doing it wrong anymore, but I know some people get a knee-jerk reaction to faith-based. I don't consider this to be a faith-based film. Number one, I think it's a good movie, and a lot of faith-based ones I've seen I wouldn't put in that camp, unfortunately. Probably funding and writing, whatever. I think this is a good movie. It's got quality performances, and it just works. I mean, it works. I have no issue with any prayer or anything else, and I think most of the world probably doesn't. So, you know, that I understand a lot of people are very skeptical in this day and age about that sort of thing. And that's, you're right. Whatever way you decide to land, I still think the movie works. And if $10 is the full price admission, what do you give Ordinary Angels?
I go $6.50. I mean, it was enjoyable. There's nothing real surprising or shocking, or it's just a really good sit down, feel good movie with the family. And I think you'll walk away with a smile on your face for sure.
Yeah, I give it $7. I think it's thoroughly entertaining. Like I said, the only drawback is it's very predictable in many respects, but it also happened. So, I mean, is that fair? I don't know.
True story kind of makes it a little hard to be surprised.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So that's Ordinary Angels. So thanks everybody for listening to that one. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode. This is just a review episode. I will be back later this week with our controversial episode. I don't know if I already started some controversy, but that's where we're going. Okay. Thanks everybody for listening. As always, please share the show with your friends. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com for our website. If you want to email us, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or we're on social media wherever you want to find us. We're on Exit by Popcorn, or The Hollywood Outsider on Facebook, etc. Thanks everybody for listening. And remember, the next time you head to a theater to see any of these, you'll be happy with any of them. I promise-ish. By Popcorn.